Fairbanks Jr. in The Silent Men. The National Broadcasting Company proudly presents Douglas Fairbanks' production of The Silent Men, transcribed stories of the undercover operations of the special agents of every branch of our federal government and their relentless fight against crime. Now here is Douglas Fairbanks.
You may remember the story as it appeared in your newspaper. Two eminent weapons designers missing, the headline shouted. And under it, plans for new anti-tank guns taken out of secret file. You'll recall the rest of the story. It expressed the belief that the two men, Alan Duval and Henry Blackmore, had taken the weapons designed they had created and left the country. The implication that they may have sold out to the enemy was there, plain and ugly. The government got the story long before you did. And on a recent trip to Washington, I obtained the story from them. In it, I play the part of secret agent Ian McKay. It is the file case entitled The Gigantic Hoax, in which only the names and places are fictional. A few days after the plans for the anti-tank gun were reported missing, I was called into the Washington office. I found my chief in conference with an attractive brunette.
Oh, come in, Ian. This is Duval. This is Ian McKay.
How do you do?
Nobody believes me. They say sure, 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 but their eyes are different.
You mustn't excite yourself, Mrs. Duval. We'll try to help you.
Oh, but I must get excited. My husband is perhaps dead, and he is accused of all of these terrible things against the government, and I am not to be excited.
According to Mrs. Duval, the two men were lured on a ruse to Canada and from there kidnapped. Did I get that straight?
Yes, and there's no trace of the man who was supposed to have called on the Duvals at their home.
Supposed to have? You still don't believe me, do you? I tell you, I was there when they came. One man in a colonel's uniform, the other in a captain's.
Did anyone else see them come into your house, a friend or a neighbor?
No, no, it was nighttime. He made me promise not to tell anyone he was being called to an arms conference in Europe.
He didn't tell you where in Europe?
No. But I can find him if you let me go.
As an American citizen, Mrs. Duval, you can go anywhere you please, excluding certain territories, of course.
But it must be done now. I cannot wait for visas and papers.
You feel sure you can find them?
Mrs. Duval fought with the underground during the war, and she feels that they will help her.
I was under the impression that the underground had gone underground.
They will help me. I have friends there. They say he has sold his invention to a foreign power. He would rather die first.
I'll tell you what, madam. Why don't you let us talk it over? When we reach some conclusion, I may get in touch with you.
That is what they have all told me. The same words, the same tone of voice.
We'll call you, you may be sure.
Oh, yes. Yes, you will call me to tell me his body has been found. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Intense little woman, isn't she?
Yeah, a little too much so, I'm afraid.
You must mean something by that. Go ahead.
Well, it's hard to put into words. It's like she shouts you down every time you have a rational question to ask.
Yeah. What do you think about this kidnapping theory?
Well, on paper, it doesn't look too good. Two men, Duval and Blackmore, invent a new high-speed anti-tank gun. They take it to the National Council of Inventors and are assigned to a munition plant by the Army to put the thing into production.
They were both screened by security.
Well, that doesn't mean too much sometimes. They complete the initial layout and take 2 weeks off to go on a fishing trip. 2 weeks pass, 3 weeks, and they don't show up. The Army comes down on an inspection trip and the plans are gone, taken out of the secret file.
Yeah, that doesn't look too good. The boys in the Pentagon are really screaming about this one. What do you want to start?
Me? Is this my baby?
I'm afraid it is. And don't overlook the kidnapping angle entirely. It's possible, you know.
And the two phony military men, the colonel and the captain, am I supposed to swallow that?
No, but leave room for it. It could happen. Well, it's all yours, Ian. What do you want to start from?
A corner drugstore with a handful of aspirins. I flew to Montreal and from there took the train to Pointe-du-Bois, a little fishing village in the Laurentians where Duval and Blackmore had said they were going fishing. The place was deserted except for an old caretaker who told me in grunts that nobody had been there yet this season. Back to Montreal I went. I got a room at a hotel and after a quick shower and change, drove out to the airport. Duval and Blackmore had definitely gotten this far. I presented my credentials to the night supervisor. He was duly impressed, but sloughed me off to the clerk in charge of tickets and registration. You Ed Jackson?
Yeah?
Your supervisor sent this note down to you.
Let's see. Give him any information he wants. Say, you must be big stuff, huh?
Take a look at these two photographs. I'm looking for these men. Landed here on May 23rd.
That's more than a month ago. No, sir, those pictures don't do a thing to me.
They came in on the afternoon flight from Buffalo, New York. I thought maybe they took another flight out.
Well, it's a tedious job, but why don't you look over the passenger list and all that going flights? You might find them there.
Where do I start?
Here, in this book. It's a bore, you silly, but then it's your job. Go ahead.
Now, if I can avoid any distractions...
Like my yakking all the time. Okay, okay. Wallow in your own gloom for all I care.
I wallowed for 2.5 hours and found nothing. I even tried to figure it out by the seating arrangement, figuring that the two of them were occupying adjoining seats.
Here, I brought you some coffee.
Oh, thanks.
Any art?
You're some kind of a cop, aren't you?
Some kind of one, yeah.
What makes you think they flew out of Montreal?
Well, it seemed logical till now. I'll have to try something else.
Hey, if these guys were on the scram, why would they use their own name? I mean, it'd be nothing to buy a couple of tickets under phony names.
And that opens up another field of speculation. If they were bound for Europe, I could concentrate on that section. Shouldn't be too hard to run down that list.
And if something looks good to you, you can check with the Trans-Canada stewardess and that flight.
My boy, you know what you've just done?
Me? What?
You've tied another knot in the binding friendship of the United States and Canada. I took the list of London-bound passengers for the week following May 23rd. That gave me 114 names to check. 67 of these were women and children. That left 47 possible suspects. In 4 days, I had checked on all but 3 passengers. These 3 men had given a Montreal hotel as their address. When I checked with the hotel, they told me they had no such guests. I went back to the airport and checked the list again. The 3 men whose identity I was looking for had all traveled to London on the same flight. Montreal to Gander, to Glasgow, to London. I waited till the same stewardess who had sparked the flight I was interested in came on duty.
Well, hello. Are you the gentleman who's been waiting to see me?
Yes, yes. I'm with the federal government of the United States. You carried 3 passengers on May 24th to London. According to your records, they occupied seats 17, 18, and 19.
May the 24th? That's a long time ago.
Here are 2 photographs of the men I'm looking for. They mean anything to you?
Well, they sure do. Especially this one, Mr. Lafleur.
You're positive?
May the 24th is a national holiday in Canada. We were traveling very light. 6 or 7 passengers, that's all. I spent most of the trip with Mr. Lafleur. You know the way these things are.
And this man?
Now, I'm not so sure of him, but I know the 3 of them were together.
Nobody met them at the airport?
Well, not that I know of.
But you'll positively identify this one man as a passenger on your flight.
But very positively.
Well, thanks. I guess that's all for now.
Anytime I can help you. Anytime at all.
Before I left, she gave me sketchy descriptions of the other 2 men. I went back to the clerk at the ticket counter, and he found a receipt for 3 tickets from Montreal to London, which had been picked up by a man named Lafleur. I had photostatic copies made of the receipt and mailed one of these and a general description of the man to counterintelligence in Ottawa. It was pretty meager information to try and run a make on, but everything's worth a try in this business. I flew back to Washington, and when the chief came into his office, I was waiting for him.
Oh, hello, Ian. You back from the war so soon?
No, just a little recess.
You got something, McKay?
Our 2 gunsmiths, in company with another man, took a flight out from Montreal to London. The names they used were Lafleur, Pelletier, and Jourdain. Phony names, phony passports.
Yeah, that doesn't do too much for the kidnapping theory, does it?
Not unless the men honestly believed it was legitimate. They may have accepted the phony passports as merely being good security precautions.
Now what?
A trip to Europe. Paris to start with. Then wherever this thing takes me.
Why Paris?
Well, that's where the passports indicated they were going. I'll contact Tim Anderson when I get there.
All right. I'll have everything ready for you in a few hours.
Oh, one more thing, Chief. Fix it so Mrs. Duval can leave right away, will you?
Well, I thought you didn't want her.
She needs watching. And I'd like her around where I can keep an eye on her.
You don't think too much of her, do you?
Well,
Just say that I'm cautiously impartial. I went back to Montreal and spent a couple of days trying to track down something on the man who called himself Lafleur. If he had engineered the deal with the phony passports and the rest of it, he was the man to know. I learned nothing by the time I was ready to make the big hop over the Atlantic. I got to the airport half an hour early. I stopped to see if the voluble little ticket clerk was still in good form.
Well, look who's here, the cop with Kosher. You're beginning to haunt this place.
Well, I won't be here long. Taking the next flight to Gander, Newfoundland. Then Glasgow, London, and Paris.
Who says a policeman's lot is not a happy one?
No.
Hey, you want to know something?
It's not the one about the two Frenchmen, is it?
No, this is on the level. It's about those guys you were looking for.
Go on.
Somebody else was in showing those pictures around.
A woman?
With a French accent.
Brown hair, brown eyes?
Yeah, I got a name, too. Said she was Mrs.
Duval.
Hey, how'd you know all this?
I didn't. Just wishful thinking, I guess. The ride was uneventful, though a little bumpy over Newfoundland. Jim Anderson, one of our agents attached to the embassy in Paris, was waiting for me with a car when I landed at the airport there. I'd wired him from London to meet me.
Hiya. Got a phone call from Washington. I think they got something on Mr. Lafleur.
Good. Let's have it.
I don't want to check the writing on the receipt with a Mr. Amon Edinger, who had had some trouble with him. They're sure it's one of the same. Deported from Canada in 1947 for illegal entry.
47, eh?
But they've got no record of him ever being back in Canada since then.
Get anything on him over here?
Yeah, plenty. Assuming that he is, Monsieur Edinger. He was with the Maquis, the French underground during the war.
Yeah.
Was exposed as a collaborationist and left the country. That must have been his Canadian episode.
Anything current on him?
Lots, including an address. Having his place watched now. He's been away for a while, but when he gets back, we'll know it.
Good. Well, take me there. No one there at all.
No. What are you going to do?
I'm going to show you how to open a lock and burglarize an apartment. Scientifically. Is this it?
Yep. I'm 12.
Stand back. I'll need a little light.
What are you doing?
Not so hot. Wait a minute. I think I've got it.
Yeah, that does it.
Nice place.
The guy spent dough. Where do we start looking?
Anywhere. I'll take the desk. You try the bookshelves.
All right, now tell me what I'm looking for, will you?
Pieces of paper with writing on it, for one thing. Want to check with his signature on this airline receipt. Make sure he's the right man.
Well, there's no doubt of that, is there?
We'll double check.
It's a book with his name on the fly sheet. I'm on Edinger.
Let's see it. Good, 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 good. It checks.
This guy's a fiend for snapshots, all neatly dated and cataloged here.
Now, let's see some of the latest ones.
Oh, there's some dated April 7th, 1951. That's not so long ago.
No, this one in front of the railway station. Wish he'd photographed the name of the building.
What for?
Well, if we get to a place he's been, he might be there again.
Kind of a forlorn hope, isn't it?
You see anything unusual about this station? If we could find some way to identify it, we could...
Oh, how about the flowers in that window box? Not too many stations are prettied up like that.
Well, that's something. And that carragana bush right alongside of it.
Yeah?
About 4 feet high and 2-3 feet away from the corner of the building.
Yeah, there's a gleam in your eye.
Mm-hmm. It's an anticipation of the swell job you're going to do in the next couple of days.
Oh. Okay, get it over with.
You're going to find me a little railway station in France that looks just like this. I put up at the Soir Hotel and had begun a few inquiries of my own. I learned that Ettinger had only recently contacted a liaison man with the French Ministry of War with an offer to turn over something of military importance at a price. He had contacted two other foreign government officials with the same proposition. One of them had been definitely interested, I learned. We set watch on this man, hoping Ettinger would show up. That night, I was getting ready for bed when there was a knock on the door. Coming!
Monsieur. Pardon, I am sorry to disturb you, but this could not wait.
You come in, Alfred. Has Ettinger showed up?
No, no, monsieur. You, had you tell me to watch the Madame Duval? She's like the eel, monsieur. Ah. I'm with her 1 minute, the next she's gone. But I have overcome this. I have locked her up in the gendarmerie.
Well, what did she do?
I see her talking to some man. I'm still looking at her, and she is gone. Voila. Then I go to see my partner. And we see a light coming from one of Ettinger's windows. We go up. It is she. She is searching the room.
Well, she's no good to us in jail. Let's get her out of there, quick.
Pardon, monsieur.
But what is it, Alfred?
It is customary, even in Paris, when one goes out, one puts on his trousers, monsieur.
It was an angry Mrs. Duval who paced the floor of the visitor's room of the prison. She didn't even stop when she heard the door open and close behind me. Mrs. Duval?
Oh, it is you. Can you get me out of this horrible place? Well,
burglary is a criminal offense in any country.
Oh, but I must get out. My husband, I cannot find him if I am in here.
And what makes you think he's in France?
Oh, I know he is. Get me out, please, monsieur.
You haven't answered my question. How do you know he's in France?
Well, I had not told you the whole truth in Washington.
Try it now.
This captain who came to see my husband with the colonel. Well, I told you he was French, but I did not tell you that I knew the man. I saw him from a distance only, and it seemed impossible. But then, when all this happened, I knew it was Ettinger.
Armand Ettinger?
Oui. During the war, I was with the Marquis, the French underground. He was too, before he turned collaborator.
Well, why didn't you tell us?
Oh. I was afraid. Should they learn that you might find him, they would kill the two men and escape.
And you thought you'd take them single-handed, eh?
I have many friends who would have helped me in their own way. Monsieur, please, you tell them to get me out of here.
All right. I'll see what I can do. Many gestures and very little French, I managed to get Mrs. Duval released. When I got home, I found Tim waiting for me.
I find your little railway station.
Good, good.
In Brittany, a little town called Le Matin.
Ah.
Only a dozen houses there and a church and a store. You'll find no arch criminals there.
Eh? Well, you're probably right, but we're going to try. Le Matin was a full day's journey out of Paris. We rented a rickety old Fiat and made all the necessary preparations for our trip. While the car was being greased, I called on Mrs. Duval.
Better I should have stayed in jail. Then I would know I could do nothing to help. This way...
What could you do, Mrs. Duval?
I don't know, but I could be active. You don't know this Ettinger the way I do. Monsieur, I have the hope of finding him one place. If I tell you, you will let me come along?
I can't expose you to the possible consequences.
What about the consequences of a murdered husband? Can you leave me with that? Don't you understand? If I could find...
Tell me where this place is. I'll not promise that.
Le Matin. A little town in Brittany.
What do you know about Le Matin?
Ettinger, he goes there often. He has friends in a chateau in the hills nearby. There may be there now. I must stay helpless here in a hotel room.
If you knew this last night, why didn't you break into Ettinger's room?
I did not know these last night. They came this morning, these friends of mine. They told me about Le Matin. Will you go there, please?
Yes. In about half an hour.
And me. I go with you.
All right, Mrs. Duval. You go with. It took everything that car had to get us to Le Matin early that evening. It was only 9 o'clock, and already the little village was bedded down for the night. We stopped in front of a small bakery shop. There's a light in the back of the store. Can you try there?
Yes.
Don't ask directly. Try and find out who's living in the chateau.
I will. I understand.
What do you make of her, Ian?
I don't know. Three quarters of the time, I think she's on the level. The other quarter...
Why'd you bring her along?
Thought I'd feel better knowing she was here with me.
You have some reservations about her?
I'm afraid so. I'll be tickled pink to be wrong, though. Kind of like to think that anybody who migrates to America gets to be an American. Quick.
I know what you mean.
Well?
A Monsieur Rigon bought the chateau last year. He has a business in the city and only comes out here occasionally.
What about Ettinger?
She would not say for sure. Monsieur Rigon has much company.
Does she know him?
No. No, he does not have anything to do with the village.
Here we are again. Nowhere.
Well, shall I try another place? The church, perhaps? The father, he might know him.
No, no. Get in, Mrs. Duval.
Where to?
The Chateau Rigon.
We're going to get in?
Two lost Americans looking for shelter. What's the chateau to an American anyway?
Oh, that is no good. You will be suspect immediately. Let me go in. Then you two come in later.
You'll sit in the car and wait. Nothing more. Understand?
Oh, all men, they are stupid. Some men, disastrously so.
We bumped along an old dirt road till we came to a huge set of wrought iron gates. Was the chateau.
Oh, how are we going to get in?
Right in. Light shining, horn honking. Then they'll know for sure we're American.
I would not do it that way, please.
Yeah, we're in luck and the gate's open.
When we pull up to the house, you get down in the back seat. And stay there until we come out or call you. Don't move.
Ian, there were some men back there by the gate. Bunch of them.
The Mackie?
What did you say?
Nothing.
I don't like this. Look, Ian, we better go back.
We can't turn back now. There's the house. It's a little too quiet to suit me.
Oh, come on, come on. Let's try the door. Huh?
You stay there, Mrs. Duval. Don't move. Duval, she's running out on us. Mrs. Duval, come back here.
Shall I go after her?
No. No, she's out foxed. Well, here goes.
No answer.
There's a light burning upstairs.
Something screwy here. Try the door.
Could use a few light bulbs in this hallway.
Shall we go any further?
Yes, let's...
No, gentlemen. Let's not.
What the...
Stay where you are, gentlemen. Tell your friend that I have a gun in your back. Kill him.
Well, seems like he has, Tim.
Now, put your hands well over your head. That's right. What? Only one gun, Mr. McKay. I'm afraid I do not know your friend's name. There. That removes the sting, gentlemen. Now, if you'll just move ahead of me, we'll go someplace where we can talk. This way, please. This is an occasion, gentlemen. We'll use the baronial library. Sit down, please. Facing me. Over there. That's better. Now, if you'll both place your hands on that table and keep them there. Comfortable, Mr. McKay?
You have the advantage over me. I don't know your name.
Come, come. How unsubtle. Of course I am Armand Ettinger. You would not have come here if you had not known what I looked like.
You were expecting us?
I was rather hoping that you would not find your way here, gentlemen. But I'm quite prepared. As you have no doubt noticed.
We're looking for two American citizens, Henry Blackmore and Alan Duval.
A very pretty speech. Almost calls for a fanfare.
Nevertheless, Mr. Ettinger, we are...
They are here. Your two American friends.
In this house?
Alive and in this house. And it's quite up to you whether they leave this house in the same condition.
Well, the man has a prepared speech. Why doesn't he make it?
You have a point there, Tim.
I forgot how direct you Americans are. Very well. I shall state my case. The two gentlemen have with them a set of blueprints which only they can explain satisfactorily. It seems they have committed some intricate details to memory, and they refuse to remember.
Good for them.
On the contrary, our patience is at an end. We were quite determined to put an end to this whole thing till you came along.
Now, where do we come in?
I have a feeling that Mr. Duval might be impressed if you ask him to divulge the necessary information. I'm sure that you can impress upon him...
I don't get it, Ian. This Duval, the way we were crossed by...
Quiet! What was that?
Nothing. Go ahead.
We have gone to much trouble arranging for them to be here. And expense. A great deal of expense.
Well?
Persuade him to talk, and you all live. Don't, and you all die. The four of you.
Give me some time to think it over.
I'm afraid not. My associates should be here any moment. They are determined that events shall happen quickly tonight. I might almost say immediately.
One burning question. How did you know my name and the fact that I was here?
Come, Mr. American. You don't seriously think I would answer that. Suffice it to say, we have avenues of information. Well, gentlemen, there come my friends. Your answer, please. That does not sound like them. Something has happened. Some are key.
My husband, where is he?
Stay back. He's here, Mrs. Duval. Alive. Stay back, I say. Don't come closer or I will kill you. Mrs. Duval, stop him.
Mrs. Duval, why did you...
I could not stop him, monsieur. They are the Marquis. The crime for which he has paid was not committed against the United States or my husband, but against France over 6 years ago.
This is Douglas Fairbanks again. You saw the first headlines in the paper. The one that said, two eminent arms designers missing. And after this report is filed, you will read these headlines. Missing weapon designers rescued. And, in smaller type, heroic woman aids federal agents in capture. Then the story will go on to give as many details as the department thinks is advisable. And so closes another chapter in the distinguished chronicle of our silent men. The special agents of all branches of our federal government who daily risk their lives to protect the lives of all of us. Next week, we'll tell you a story involving espionage and murder in the file case entitled The Enemy, another venture undertaken for our protection by the Silent Men.
Silent Men is produced and directed by Warren Lewis. Tonight's case was written by Lewis and Russoff and transcribed in Hollywood. Only the names and places were fictional. Featured in tonight's cast were Betty Lou Gerson, Bill Conrad, Lamont Johnson, Ted Osborne, and Charles Davis. Your announcer is Don Stanley. Douglas Fairbanks is currently presenting Betty Davis, Gary Merrill, and Emlyn Williams in the motion picture Another Man's Poison. Listen again next week and every week to other exciting cases involving the law enforcement adventures of the special agents of our federal government. For they are the Silent Men. You're tuned to your favorite station of the NBC Radio Network, where you'll always find the very finest radio entertainment. Day and night, every day of the year, during every waking hour, NBC presents music, drama, comedy, mystery, sports, the latest news and programs of public service. You have made this your favorite NBC station because of the wide variety of great programs always available at the turn of the dial. We at NBC will continue to send you the finest radio entertainment and furnish you with the most up-to-date news from all of the news centers of the world. NBC, the national broadcasting company, is now in its second quarter century of broadcasting in the public service. Always tuned where you hear the familiar NBC chimes. They're your invitation to fine radio entertainment.